gave me hope.
Driving up Potshot Road made me feel even better. The trees made a quiet, leafy tunnel. Shafts of sunlight poked through them, striping the air and covering the rutted dirt road with white spots of dancing light. Freaking out with Betty faded into the furthest reaches of my mind. Everything did. My full belly, the bouncing of the truck, and the green calm almost put me to sleep.
I drove slowly as I neared the crest, hoping to see a deer bound away or the shimmer of a pheasant's tail.
What I saw was a pickup truck parked in our driveway. It wasn't Uncle Mike's. The only other people who ever came by our place were either sent by a government agency or drawn here by Amber's ass. A kid with two-tone hair wearing three earrings, a hemp bracelet, and a beaded choker sat on the hood drinking a can of Red Dog and smoking a cigarette. He looked in my direction but didn't nod or smile or acknowledge me with a wave. I considered that impolite. I hadn't noticed Jody and Misty on the porch. When I got out of my truck, Jody tore across the yard, her face streaked with tears, and threw herself at my legs. Misty didn't follow her, but she stood up and allowed our eyes to meet, which was the most contact we'd had since the day I took the money. "What's going on?" I asked, putting my hands on Jody's shoulders but staring at the kid on the truck.
"Amber's running away," Jody bawled.
"Who the fuck are you?" I yelled at him. He slowly took the can away from his mouth. He had the stale eyes and rehearsed smirk of someone who spent a lot of time in dim, smoky rooms thinking about himself.
"Who the fuck are you?"
he yelled back. I started toward him, but Jody had wrapped herself so tightly around my legs I couldn't move.
"Don't let Amber go," she cried. "Please, Harley, don't let her go."
"Don't worry, she's not going anywhere," I said. I pried her off me and stalked over to the kid. "I asked you who you are." He finished his beer and tossed the can in my yard.
"I'm a friend of Amber's,"
he answered, poking the cigarette back between his lips.
"You must be her brother, the bag boy."
I waited for my hand to explode from my side like it had been doing lately, but nothing happened. I stared dumbly at it.
"Don't hurt him, Harley,"
Jody said, coming up beside me.
"Hurt me?"
the kid laughed.
"Just make him go away."
"Hurt him," Misty shouted from the porch.
The front door slammed open and Amber stepped out, lugging a suitcase and carrying her pillow. She stopped when she saw me. All the blood drained from her face and her eyes turned black from some unspeakable outrage brewing inside her.
"Come on," the kid yelled at her. "I'm hungry, let's go."
I walked toward her without thinking.
"What are you doing?"
"I'm leaving you."
"What did you say?"
"You heard me."
I grabbed her arm with my throbbing hand. She ripped it away.
"Don't touch me," she said savagely. "Amber, what's going on?"
"I won't live with you anymore,"
she turned around and hissed at me.
"You're disgusting."
Jody came and squeezed in between us. She hugged Amber around the waist.
"Don't go,"
she whimpered.
"I'm sorry, Jody. I don't want to go, but I have to. It's all Harley's fault. Be mad at him."
"What did I do?"
I cried out. She grabbed up her stuff and took off running for the kid's truck. He didn't make a move to help her. He should have been carrying her stuff. He should have been comforting her. He should have been opening the door for her. He was blowing smoke and watching her tits bounce.
"You know what you did,"
she turned around and screamed at me.
"Harley,"
Jody tugged on my arm.
"Shoot his tires,"
she pleaded. "It's okay, Jody."
"No, it's not."
Amber threw her suitcase in the back and climbed into the cab with her pillow. She slammed the door shut and bowed her head, crying. Her friend took his good old time getting down from the hood.
"Stop her,"
Jody begged. "She'll be back."
"No, she won't."
I put my arm around Jody's shoulders. She was crying so hard she shook. That kid wants one thing from her, and once he gets it, he's going to dump her in a parking lot somewhere.
"Does he want her pillow?"
I looked down at her, at all the love and trust shining in her eyes. I was never going to have a kid. I had too much respect for them.
"Yeah,"
I said.
"Will you go get her in the parking lot?"
Yeah, I'll go get her.
Okay,
she sniffed.
Are you sure?
Yeah. She plunked down on the top porch step.
This is all Misty's fault, she grumbled.
Misty was standing at the far end of the porch. She didn't show any sign that she had heard Jody. I told her her egg roll was in the truck. She didn't show any sign that she had heard me either, but then she walked to the porch railing, swung herself over it, and started across the yard. I didn't want to ask Jody what she meant. I had survived one doomsday strike. I wasn't ready for another. But I made the mistake of checking on Misty. She had the bag from Yee's in her hand, but all I saw was the cheap sparkle of the fake pink stones around her wrist. It struck me that I couldn't remember seeing her without the collar since the day she had put it on. She came walking back. She handed Jody her fortune cookie and pink paper umbrella and took the rest of the stuff inside. Jody cracked open her cookie.
"Good news will come to you by mail," she read, and wrinkled up her nose. That's a dumb one. Confucius didn't say that. They didn't even have mail when he was alive. They only had voices.
I think you're right, I said, sitting down next to her. I don't think Confucius wrote all the fortunes, just the good ones. She kept it just the same. She folded it in half and carefully slipped it into a pocket in her jean jacket with the Pocahontas fringe. I still didn't want to ask about Misty, but I saw the collar in my mind, sad and ugly in its necessity like a bad wig. She was my responsibility now.
Why did you say Amber leaving was Misty's fault?
Her eyes turned thoughtful, and she studied one of Amber's clunky sandal footprints hardening in the mud.
She told Amber something today when Amber got home from school, and it made her really mad. The kind of mad where you cry.
What did she tell her?
I don't know. They went into her room and closed the door. It was about you, though. I heard your name a bunch of times.
She stood up all of a sudden and walked over to where a tulip was sprouting from the ground like a purple bullet. She knelt down and bent her head toward it like she meant to kiss it.
I asked Misty to tell me, but she said it was a secret, she told me, walking back to the steps.
She sat down with a big deflated sigh.
Misty keeps secrets better than anyone. She told me I wouldn't be able to keep it.
You kept the secret about Mom's money, I reminded her.
Misty said if I told, Mommy and Daddy would get in the biggest fight ever and get divorced.
She glanced up at me. People always commented on her Sleeping Beauty hair, but her eyes were her most striking feature. They were a soft, downy gray and gave everyone the benefit of the doubt.
Do you think I should have told? She asked me.
I don't think it would have made any difference. I leaned back and stretched out my legs. I crossed them at the ankles, doing my best to appear casual.
Have you kept any other secrets for Misty?
Maybe. You know, when Misty tells you you can't tell anyone, she's not talking about me.
Yes, she is.
She tells you not to tell me?
She tells me not to tell anyone. You're anyone.
Did she ever ask you to keep a secret about getting lots of blood on a shirt?
You mean the night Mommy shot Daddy?
One of my hands jumped at my side. The surprise started my heart thumping too fast. She got blood on her shirt that night? I asked, conversationally.
Yeah, but it wasn't a secret. Mommy knew.
I stood up. I could hear my heart pounding in my ears. I could feel it in my throat.
My fingertips quivered. 6 seconds. Tick-tock.
How did she get blood on her shirt? When she hugged Daddy. She told me he was going to be okay, but I saw him and I knew he wasn't okay.
Misty never hugged Daddy, I said cautiously. The ambulance had taken him away by the time the state trooper and me brought her back from the mall.
I know.
She was at the mall. I saw her with my own eyes.
I know. Mommy drove her there.
Of course Mom drove her there. How else would she get there? I walked over to the railing. I put my torn-up hands on it and squeezed. The pain affected me like being pinched out of a dream. I suddenly understood the other question I needed to ask. When did Mom drive her there? I asked.
I don't know. I can't tell time yet.
Was it before or after Mom and Dad had their fight?
After.
After, I said.
After,
she said. You're saying Mom drove Misty to the mall after she shot Dad? She nodded. 4 seconds. Tick-tock. Sweat beads popped out along my hairline and started sliding down my face. You're saying Mom shot Dad and left him lying dead in the kitchen, then loaded Misty in the truck and drove her to the mall?
I guess so.
You're not making sense, Jody. You must be confused. You were only 4 years old when it happened, and you were in shock. You didn't talk for 6 months. Do you remember that? Not talking to anybody?
I remember.
I paced up and down, my boots making the same futile thuds that Dad's used to make when he was contemplating a day full of cement. 3 seconds. Tick, tock. I knelt down on the porch beside her. What did Mom do when she got back from the mall?
She got a shovel out of the shed and went in the woods. I thought she was going to bury Daddy.
Did she bury Misty's shirt?
She looked at me curiously. Why would she do that?
Did she have Misty's shirt with her? I persisted.
I don't know. It was hard to see. I was in the doghouse.
Did you see her come back?
Yeah.
What did she do?
She put the shovel away and went in the house. Pretty soon the police cars came. Are you mad at me?
Why didn't you tell the police Misty was home when Mom shot Dad?
They didn't ask me.
2 seconds. Tick. Talk. Why would they? One of their troopers had just picked her up at the Orange Julius, and Mom had just turned herself in.
Are you okay, Harley? You look sick. You look like you did when we went to visit Mommy.
I'm fine, I said, taking a shaky breath and smiling bravely. 1 second.
I reached out suddenly and wrapped my arms around her in the nick of time.
She hugged me back, and I closed my eyes in relief as I saw Donnie on a flaming zinger intercept Misty in a bloody sunflower shirt and blast her into a million pieces. Chapter 14. Amber didn't come back until Saturday morning. I was out front sawing away at Dad's piece of pipe when one of her girlfriends drove up and dropped her off. She trudged across the yard, lugging her suitcase with both hands, trying not to look at me.
Elvis trotted over to her with his tail waving and gave her a good sniffing.
I could smell her from where I was. Sex and Egg McMuffin. She looked tired, and I noticed a small bruise where her jaw met her throat. Where's Prince Charming? I shouted at her.
Fuck you,
she said on her way past. I rented your room, I told her. You're going to have to sleep in one of the doghouses. She dropped her suitcase on the ground and tripped over it trying to charge at me. This is temporary, she yelled, getting up and rubbing at her knee through her torn jeans. I'm getting out of here as soon as I can make arrangements.
Jesus, Amber, what is with you?
I stood up and flexed my sore hands. I hadn't been taking very good care of them. They were swollen, and the splinter wounds were festering. I wondered if Callie would suck on them for me. If you want to run away from home, I can't stop you, but why now? Why are you so pissed at me? I don't want to live with you anymore, that's all. I want to live with Dylan. Dylan, I spit out the name. How the hell are you going to live with Dylan? Won't his parents notice an extra body in his bed? He's graduating next week, and he and a couple friends went in together and bought a trailer. Oh, great. That's just great. You in a trailer with three guys. You going to gangbang them, or will they alternate nights? I hate you. She went back to her suitcase and picked it up, wincing. I realized she was having a hard time with it because she was hurt. I remembered how I used to feel after one of Dad's beatings. I'd wake up with bruises on parts of my body I never knew he hit. What did he do to you? I shouted at her.
Nothing.
Amber! She stopped and turned around with an exhausted sigh. Even the hummingbird peeking over the back of her hip-hugger jeans looked a shade less green today. Why do you give yourself to assholes like that? I said, lowering my voice a little. You don't even make them work for it.
They want me.
she replied flatly.
Of course they want you. It doesn't mean they should get you. You're one to talk.
What?
She went inside, too tired to slam for once. I had a mental flash of her standing naked under the shower, her bruised skin looking like an impressionist had gone at her with loving strokes of gray greens and yellows and rosy purples. I should have wanted to kill him, but I wanted to kill her. I wanted to break her pretty neck and end it now like a bad TV show turned off in the middle. The day was cool. I had worked up a great sweat sawing, but now that I'd stopped, I was shivering. May had been beautiful, which probably meant the first couple weeks of June were going to be cold and rainy. The sky beyond the hills was turning to pencil lead. I got back down on my knees and picked up the saw. Elvis went back to gnawing on a tree limb he had dragged in from the woods. It was twice as long as he was. I didn't look up when I heard the front door open and shut again. I had a good, strong rhythm going. Once I had the pipe sawed off as close to the ground as I could get it, I was going to cover it with dirt and mark it with a rock slab like a grave. Jody's pink canvas sneakers walked into my field of vision. She lowered a can of Red Dog down where I could see it. "Where'd you get this?" I asked after I grabbed it from her.
"Amber has a whole bunch in her suitcase. She told me to bring you one."
"You were right," she added, plopping down on the grass and crossing her legs Indian style.
"He just wanted her pillow."
I popped the top and gulped down half the can. "How many did she bring?"
"I don't know, hundreds maybe. We're going to have a slumber party tonight, me and Amber and Misty. Amber said so. We're going to put sleeping bags on the floor and eat popcorn and watch TV and tell scary stories and paint our fingernails."
"Misty?" I wondered.
"She's glad Amber's back. She told her running away from you wasn't going to solve anything."
"What the hell? Did you tell Misty what we talked about the other night on the porch?"
"What did we talk about?"
"Did you tell her you told me she was home the night Mom and Dad had their big fight?"
"She knows she was home."
"That's not what I mean. Did you tell her you told me?"
"No. Do you want me to?"
"No, I don't want you to."
"Why not?"
"Just don't."
"What if she asks me?"
"Why would she ask you?"
"You asked me."
"Just don't talk to her at all."
"Why not?"
Elvis stopped gnawing and his ears perked up. An engine sounded from down the road. I stood up, wondering if Dylan would have the nerve to come after her. Or maybe he was coming after his beer.
"That's Esme," Jody announced excitedly. "We're going to the Lickin' Putt."
She ran across the yard, shrieking, waving her arms so hard her whole body jiggled. I wasn't sure what I should do. I'd gone over to Callie's house the day before in my lunch hour, and she wasn't there. She hadn't shown up at the ShopRite either for her Friday night shopping. I was beginning to think she was avoiding me. But she couldn't be if she was taking Jody to the Lickin' Putt. I could go too. We couldn't do anything on a miniature golf course, but she would have to bend over a lot. Her husband's Grand Cherokee pulled into our driveway, and her husband was driving it. That was bad enough. My day was shot right there. I had been able to force Callie out of my mind so far today, since I knew I couldn't see her until Monday. I was planning on making another lunch hour visit, but now I was thinking about her again. Now I was all keyed up, imagining her bending over to help Zach line up a putt, imagining her licking an ice cream cone. I probably could have handled it, though.
I probably could have just gone back to what I was doing and sawed through the pipe with a newfound vengeance, but the guy parked his Jeep and opened his door.
My stomach clenched into a knot, and I chugged the rest of my beer. I hoped he knew about us. I could have handled a fist fight, but I didn't think I could handle discussing the weather with him. I stayed in the middle of the yard waiting to see if trumpets sounded when he got out. If he was built like Schwarzenegger or had cherubs flying around him like Zeus, he was the man who possessed Callie Mercer, the man who slept in the same bed with her naked body every night, the man who ate her pork chops. In a sense, he was my idol. I expected him to be larger than life. I took in every detail, the regular features, the short dark hair, the average build. He wasn't tall, he wasn't short. He wasn't old or young. He could have been a dressed-down banker or a dressed-up redneck, in a pair of Palomino gold hiking boots, new jeans, and a faded red work shirt over a gray t-shirt. He opened the back door of the Jeep for Jody, and she bounded inside. Then he turned and called to me. "How you doing?" before giving Elvis a scratch between the ears and a couple thumps on his side. My feet moved across the grass. I watched them go and felt the rest of my body follow. He extended a hand. "You must be Harley," he said, friendly as hell. "I'm Brad Mercer." I started to reach out my hand, then remembered I had an excuse not to shake. I showed it to him instead. "Wow, what'd you do? Stick it in a hornet's nest?"
"Splinters," I said.
"Wow," he shook his head. "You might want to get a doctor to look at that."
"No health insurance," I told him. I didn't know why.
"Neither of your jobs gives you benefits?"
"One does, but it wouldn't leave me with any paycheck."
He shook his head.
"That's terrible."
"We can't all be bankers," I said.
He laughed. I was being serious.
"Thank God for that," he said. "Imagine a world full of nothing but bankers."
"Don't you like them?"
"Not particularly."
"But you are one."
"I know."
"You don't like your job?"
I didn't expect him to answer. I was being an asshole. I was trying to get him to say something bitchy about his wife so I could remind him he owed everything to her.
"I wanted to go into teaching," he explained.
"But everybody I knew shot down that idea. I added a business minor in school to be safe. Worked in a bank for a couple years. I was ready to quit and try something else, then I met the boss's daughter coming out of his office.
And banking didn't seem so bad anymore."
He had a good smile. What people called a genuine smile. A boyish smile. Women liked those. That was probably what Callie liked about him. And he wanted to be a teacher. That probably meant he was smart and liked books and art.
I couldn't tell yet if he had the almighty good sense of humor every beautiful woman in the world said was so damn important, even though they all married rich guys with no sense of humor at all.
"You've got a great view up here," he commented.
"We don't own it," I replied immediately.
"Why would you want to?" he said.
"Just means you'd have to pay taxes on it. Nobody's going to threaten that land. The coal companies have all pulled out. Who'd want to build on it way out here in the middle of nowhere?"
"You've got a great situation here."
"I thought maybe you owned it. I mean, your wife owned it."
He shook his head. "Callie owns about 50 acres her grandfather willed to her, but it's all north of here, on the other side of Black Lake Road."
"She owns it? By herself?"
He nodded, smiling boyishly and genuinely. "I'm just a tenant." One of the back windows on the Jeep glided down.
"Dad, come on," Esme demanded. "Come on, come on, come on," Jody and Zach chanted behind her.
"It's okay with you if we take Jody to the Lickin' Putt?"
he asked. "I talked to your sister on the phone this morning. She said you were still asleep, but she was sure you wouldn't mind."
"Is your wife at home by herself?"
"No, she's off somewhere. I don't know where. She needs a break from the house and the kids now and then. But I don't get to spend enough time with the kids. I work a lot of late nights, do a lot of traveling."
"You doing any traveling in the near future?"
"I've got a golf weekend coming up. The last weekend in June, I think it is."
"Daddy!"
"I'd better get going." He smiled again.
"It was good to finally meet you, Harley."
He stuck out his hand again. My instinct was to shake it. I felt an awkward locker room closeness with him. We had been inside the same woman, which was kind of like sharing a wet towel.
"Sorry,"
he said, lowering his hand and glancing at mine.
"Take care of yourself."
"Sure." He walked to his Jeep.
"Looks like you might get rained out," I called after him.
"If it starts raining, we'll just lick instead of putt."
He closed his door, started the engine, and lowered his window.
"You sure you don't know where your wife is?" I asked.
"No? Why, you need her for something?"
"That's okay," I said.
He waved. The kids waved too. Elvis chased after them, and they all went nuts over it. I knew exactly what the inside of the Jeep sounded like, and I was glad I was on the outside because I had a headache from drinking my beer too fast.
All of a sudden, they stopped bouncing around and settled into their seats. I was sure Brad Mercer had made them put on their seatbelts. I had a feeling he was one of those caring dads. My prediction about the sawing came true. I finished in half the time now that I had Callie back in my head and a beer in my bloodstream. I went to the shed and got the shovel my mom had buried Misty's shirt with and covered what was left of the pipe's ragged rim with dirt. Then I moved the couch back over the spot before going inside. Amber had her radio on full blast. She had her door closed, but the whole house throbbed to the bass. Misty's door was closed, too. I stopped at Amber's and pounded. I shouted at her to open up. The volume went down, but the door stayed shut. "I'm going somewhere," I yelled through it. "So make sure you're here when Jody gets back." Silence, then the radio turning off completely, then angry footsteps, then the door flying open. She had changed out of her jeans into a big t-shirt and flannel boxers. Her hair was pulled up to the very top of her head in a coppery fountain. "You sure as hell don't waste any time," she snapped furiously. I took a step back. "What are you talking about?" "It's sick and perverted and disgusting and sinful." "What is? I can't even look at you. You make me want to throw up." The door slammed shut. I waited a second to see if she was going to add anything. Amber's fits were the closest I would probably ever come to seeing live entertainment. She turned the radio back up and I turned to leave.
Misty was there in the hall drinking a Mountain Dew, a perfectly normal-looking girl doing nothing out of the ordinary, but she gave me a start.
I took a backward step away from her without thinking about it.
"I need to talk to you," she said.
"Huh?"
She stood planted in the hall. "Is this a bad time?" she asked. I felt funny. I got a bad taste in my mouth. I realized I was afraid, but I didn't know what I was afraid of.
"I was going somewhere, but I can talk for a minute," I said. She raised the metallic green can to her lips and lowered it again.
"Are you still mad about the money?" she asked me.
"No."
The can went up and down again, and again with excruciating slowness. Her fingernails were painted purple today. In the dim hallway light, they looked like she had caught all 10 of them in a slammed door, and now they were dead and about to fall off. The stones in the collar around her wrist were clear but dull like dirty ice. I had no more reason to fear her than an artichoke. "There's something I want to ask you," she continued. "But before I do, I want you to promise you're going to keep an open mind."
"I don't have an open mind." "Try," she said, and her dark eyes fixed themselves on mine. Her words were a soothing threat. Maybe she was going to tell me what really happened the night Mom shot Dad. Maybe she was going to tell me what really happened between her and Dad. Maybe she was going to tell me what was going on with Amber.
"I want to get a tattoo."
"What?"
"A tattoo."
"A tattoo?"
"Yes."
Relief rushed through me. This revelation was disgusting in its own right, but it was something I was equipped to deal with.
"No way," I said. "Come on, Harley, why not? You're too young."
"I knew you were going to say that," she said,
her voice calm but irritated.
"That's such a cop-out. Lots of kids in my class have them. There's a place out by the mall that does kids over 12 with parental consent. They do a really good job. Nobody's ever got a disease from it."
"No."
She took a deep breath.
"Come on."
It was the closest I had ever heard Misty come to pleading. The needy tone was unnerving.
"Did Amber put you up to this?" I asked her.
"Amber doesn't even know I want one. I don't want her to know."
"Why not?"
"I don't want her to think I'm copying her. I only wanted one because I like the way they look. I thought maybe you'd understand that, Mr. Art Institute of Chicago."
I didn't have a chance to say anything else to her. Her face and eyes went blank, and the sociable part of her disappeared with the silent, single-minded menace of a mummy returning to his tomb. She went into her bedroom to be alone. But the act was more symbolic than necessary. The second her door closed behind her, I headed for my truck. The motor was idling when the front door opened and Amber stepped out on the porch, her face brick red and her eyes ringed with wet mascara.
"I know where you're going," she screamed. Then she stepped back inside, and slammed the door shut.
I didn't get upset about it. I didn't see how she could know. She hadn't even been home yesterday when I made the call to Betty and asked her to help me get in to see Mom. Chapter 15. The prison waiting area looked like tryouts for a Little Miss pedophilia pageant. The kids were mostly girls. I didn't know why. Maybe women prone to criminal acts gave birth to more girls than boys. Maybe there was something viciously female about their hormones that enabled them to kill men in and out of the womb. Or maybe it was because the adults who brought them here were mostly women and thought the girls could learn something. I considered both reasons while I stood inside the doorway, feeling like a chewed-up piece of gray meat someone had spit out on a plate full of Christmas cookies. I had never seen so many gold bows and pearl buttons and fake jewels together in one place except for the Walmart craft section where I took Jody every year to buy stuff to make Valentines. Everybody stared at me. Adult conversation stopped. Magazines were lowered. Little ones stopped bouncing on laps. Older ones looked up from coloring last-minute pictures and playing with Game Boys or Polly Pocket sets. I glanced down at myself to make sure my fly wasn't open or my boots weren't untied. I had grass stains on my jeans and dirt under my fingernails.
I couldn't remember when I had shaved last or combed my hair.
My days and nights had begun to bleed together into one big sticky puddle. All the chairs were taken. It was a Saturday. I moved around the perimeter of the room, trying to find a square foot of space that didn't smell like crayons or bubblegum. I ended up standing behind two women who didn't appear to have any children with them. One of them had on pencil-leg jeans, red cowboy boots, and a purple velvet tank top. The other one was dressed like a TV realtor in a mustard-yellow blazer and sensible shoes.
The only place in the world they could have looked okay sitting beside each other was a city bus or a prison waiting room.
I leaned against the wall behind them and assured myself my own wait wouldn't be long. Almost everyone here was in line for a hug room. I was going to be doing my visiting through plexiglass. I wouldn't have been able to get in at all if it hadn't been for Betty. I had called her Thursday after my talk on the porch with Jody and before my hot dogs and macaroni and cheese. I didn't give her any details. I told her I had to see my mom, that it was time for closure.
Then I explained that I hadn't been completely honest with her about my other visit with Mom, that I got kind of upset, nothing too weird, sort of the way I acted with her sometimes, and when I came to, I was lying on a cot in an office like a school nurse's, and a man from prisoner relations and a woman shrink talked to me in golf commentator voices and tried to get me to tell them my mom had attacked me. I wouldn't do it. I told them I hadn't been feeling too well lately, but they still decided she shouldn't have any visitors for 6 months.
When I finished talking, there was a long silence. I thought Betty was going to be pissed at me. But she got pissed at the prison. The way she said it reminded me of the loan officer with his scenic wonders calendar talking to me about the bank and how the bank couldn't make allowances for me and my sisters, but how the bank wished he could help. According to Betty, the prison should have been aware that I was a teenage boy under psychiatric care who hadn't seen my mother since the day I watched her leave a courthouse almost 2 years earlier to start serving a life sentence. The prison should have talked to Betty first. The prison might have caused me extensive emotional damage and should do everything possible to rectify the situation. She said she'd take care of it for me, but she made me promise to schedule an appointment with her as soon as possible afterward. She said she'd see me on a weekend or a lunch hour if I couldn't get time off work. I promised to make the appointment. I did not promise to keep it. I settled back against the wall and closed my eyes. 4 more days until I saw Callie again. 4. Unless I tried to see her during my lunch break on Monday, or unless Jody played at their house after Lickin' Putt and Callie drove her home, and I casually walked out to the car to thank her and then begged her to meet me at the mining office tonight and to bring the stuff to make s'mores. 4.
The number strobed like gunfire against the black in front of my eyes.
Watching it made me feel sick to my stomach. Then it stopped, and I saw Callie's lips hovering over me, one perfect milky drop clinging to them. She kissed me, and I tasted myself.
I didn't respond to her kiss, and she drew away, disappointed. She rolled me off the blanket, folded it, and put it in her backpack. She closed up the cooler and stepped into her panties. I wanted to tell her to stay, but I was dead or asleep. She started walking away. I hadn't done anything for her. Nothing at all. No wonder she had left. I thought about her smile the day we did it on the table. A smile that said, "I'm done." I opened my eyes and saw the two women.
"I don't know," the one in cowboy boots said. "I have a hard time telling if she's being serious or not." The one dressed like a realtor nodded. "The last time I came to see her, she told me prison isn't all that different from married life, except she has more free time now and the sex is better."
They both laughed. I watched the room spin and grow dark. My knees buckled, and I sat down on the floor. The women craned their necks over the backs of their chairs.
"Are you okay?" the realtor asked.
"Yeah," I said, swallowing a couple times.
"You don't look so good, hon," the cowgirl said. "You here with anybody?"
I shook my head.
"Who are you visiting?"
"My mom."
"You poor kid."
"You want my seat?" the realtor asked, standing up. "No, thanks," I said. "I better just stay here." It turned out staying there was the worst thing I could have done because every little kid in the room came over to check me out, and they depressed the hell out of me. Some of them walked right up to me, stared for a few silent seconds, and left. Some peered timidly around the cowgirl's chair, giggling or skeptical. Only one talked to me. She was about Jody's age, with brown hair that hadn't been brushed in a while, and a face that might have been cute if she ever smiled. But I had a feeling she never did. Her ears were pierced. Her eyelids were smeared with glittery lavender, and her lips were neon pink. She had fake tattoos on the tops of her hands and one cheek. The one on her cheek had been a unicorn, but it was flaking off now and looked like a dirt smudge or a bruise. Her little girl pot belly stuck out between white jeans and an orange shirt the color of a warning sign, with the word "groovy" written across it in wavy green letters.
"Why are you sitting on the floor?"
she asked me.
"There aren't any chairs," I replied. "Why are you wearing makeup?"
"It makes me look good," she answered immediately. "Why do you want to look good?"
"I don't know."
"It doesn't make you look good," I told her.
She watched me for a moment to see if I was being serious. Then her face fell. She looked really hurt.
I was glad. I wanted to hurt her. Making her mad would have just made her go home and put more crap on her face.
"It does too," she said, not very convincingly.
"It does not."
I noticed the cowgirl and realtor were listening.
"It's going to get you in trouble. Do you know what birth control is?" Both women turned their heads and looked down at me.
"No,"
the girl said. "Well, you better learn."
"Excuse me," the realtor said. "What are you telling this little girl?"
I ignored her.
"What's birth control?"
the little girl asked. "It keeps you from getting pregnant. Do you know what that is?"
"When you get a baby."
"Right. Do you know how you get pregnant?"
The realtor shot me a furious glare and told me to stop it. She got up from her chair and asked who belonged to this little girl. "I know you gotta have a boyfriend. At least that's how my mom does it."
"You're a smart kid," I told her. I was right. She was cute when she smiled. "If you got a boyfriend, you're bound to get pregnant," I explained.
"What's bound mean?"
"It's going to happen. You can't stop it."
"I thought it meant when you tied somebody up."
"You really are a smart kid," I told her. She smiled again.
"My teacher says I don't use time wisely."
"Next time she tells you that, ask her how wisely she uses all that time she gets off from her job every summer."
"Huh? Jamie, what the hell are you doing?"
A skinny, rat-faced woman with too much hair and too many inalienable rights came stalking toward us. She grabbed the little girl by the arm near her shoulder.
"Get away from him. He was telling me how to get pregnant,"
the girl explained, not even seeming to notice the hand clamped around her arm like a blood pressure cuff.
"Get away from her, you pervert," the woman snapped at me.
"Are you her mom?"
I asked. It ain't none of your business who I am.
Are you the one who lets her wear makeup and dress like a slut?
Her mouth dropped open. She showed as much indignation as possible for a person wearing a Penns Ridge Speedway Demolition Derby t-shirt. This year's slogan had been, "Wham, bam, thank you, ma'am."
You're the pervert, I told her calmly, for letting her look like that.
I'm getting a guard, she said.
He says my makeup don't look good,
Jamie mentioned while standing perfectly still.
She seemed to know any movement would make the hand grip tighter. Your mom probably wouldn't be in jail right now if she had never worn makeup, I further explained to her.
Don't listen to him, Jamie. He don't know nothing about you or your mom.
I know everything about you, Jamie. When I said her name, she looked at me like I had produced an egg from behind her ear. You're going to get pregnant because you think if you fuck guys, they'll love you, and you want somebody to love you because you think nobody does.
Shut up, the woman shouted. I'll go get a guard for you, the realtor said.
The guy who does it to you isn't going to love you either because he's going to be too stupid to realize what you're worth, but you're going to think it's because you're not pretty enough.
What's he mean, Aunt Kathy?
Jamie asked, looking up at her.
Aunt Kathy gave her arm a yank and started dragging her away.
The worst thing you can do is marry him, I continued, raising my voice enough so she could still hear me. But no matter what you do, your life will be over. It's already over if you keep looking like that.
You mean I'll be dead?
She called, after taking her eyes off me.
Stop talking to him,
Aunt Kathy said with another yank. You'll be alive on the outside. I put two fingers beneath my eyes and pulled down so she could see the gross red inside part of the sockets. And dead on the inside, I finished.
Like a zombie?
Right.
I don't want to be a zombie.
Aunt Kathy gave her a final hard yank and swatted her behind.
I said stop talking to him.
The door opened and the realtor walked in, followed by a guard carrying a clipboard. He didn't look much older than me. He had a buzz cut and was wearing reflective black sunglasses indoors. That was always a bad sign. I stood up. I didn't want to give him any valid reason to put his hands on me.
Get yourself one of those implants, I kept talking to Jamie. Get it when you're 10.
The guard positioned himself inside the room. He didn't come after me. He motioned with his hand for me to get my ass out the door.
My sister got her period when she was 11, I said, walking past her.
Some of the women hugged their girls protectively as I went by, but others were unconsciously nodding at my remarks the way they did at Oprah when her show really hit home.
Move it outside, the guard said.
You should be locked up for letting her look like that. I made a final announcement to Aunt Kathy at the door. I mean it. Locked up. The ACLU can take a fucking leap.
Out,
the guard barked. Once I got out of the room, I started shaking. I folded my arms across my chest and buried my hands under them. They always seemed to shake more than the rest of me, and I didn't want the guard to notice. I took a couple of deep breaths. He looked me up and down and cleared his throat.
Who are you here to see?
He asked.
My mom.
He flipped a page over on his clipboard.
What's the prisoner's name?
Bonnie Altmer.
And you are?
Harley.
I should send your ass packing for that little display in there, Harley.
I was just trying to be helpful.
He put the clipboard under his arm. You think telling a little girl to get on birth control when she's 10 is helpful?
Yes, I said. He studied me again, but I couldn't tell what he was thinking because of the glasses.
Come with me, he said finally. You've got 10 minutes.
He led me to a room of gray stalls made of filing cabinet metal. Inside each one, a visitor sat on the edge of a straight-backed chair made of hard gray vinyl. Most of these visitors were men. I couldn't see their expressions, but they were all intently hunched forward and talking in low tones. I was surprised to find Mom already sitting at my stall. Seeing her behind plexiglass, in her faded yellow uniform, waiting expectantly with her hands folded on the counter in front of her, I felt like I should ask for tickets to a matinee.
Is everything all right at home? She asked before I could even sit, her voice sounding like she was talking to me from inside a cocoon.
No one shot anybody, if that's what you mean.
My comment caught her off guard. She looked surprised, then arched her eyebrows as if she meant to scold me. I was her son, and her first instinct was to discipline. But I was also the grown man who was raising her children and running her household, which put her in my debt. "Was that supposed to be funny?" she asked. "Yes," I answered. "Well, it wasn't." "Well, I'm sorry. I guess I should have worked on my prison small talk before I got here."
"Harley, please. What's wrong?"
"Nothing."
"Why are you here?"
I banged out of my seat.
"Excuse me for coming.
Sit down," she said with maternal firmness. My body instinctively resisted, then instinctively obeyed. She watched me for a moment, her expression alternating between worry and exasperation.
"I don't want to fight with you," she said finally.
I suddenly realized that I did want to fight. All the secrets and lies came rushing at me, all the abandonment and betrayal. What had been going on between Dad and Misty? What really happened the night he got shot? I had so many questions, big and little, I didn't know where to start.
"You look sick, baby," I heard her say.
She raised her hand without thinking to check my forehead for a fever and hit the glass wall with the startling death thump of a bird flying into a window. We both jerked back at the sound.
"I'm fine," I told her.
"You look like you haven't slept in days. When's the last time you took a shower or even changed your clothes?"
"Recently."
"Are you growing a beard?"
"Stop it, Mom." I dug my hands into my hair. I thought about ripping it out and presenting it to her along with a prayer like a plea to a stone goddess. "Help me, Mom." I took a shaky breath and brought my hands back down to my sides. My fingers felt greasy from touching my hair. She was watching me. Concerned, but no longer sympathetic. She shifted in her chair, sized me up, squared off. We were both thinking the same thing. What happens when someone you love becomes the enemy? Do you destroy him to save yourself, or do you join him in his hell?
"Why are you here, Harley?"
Her voice was cold. I'd never heard her talk like that to me. There were times I had made her angry enough to scream, frustrated enough to cry, depressed enough to sit up all night and eat a Sara Lee cheesecake. But I had never made her dislike me. What was I doing? I asked myself in a panic. What good was the truth going to do me or anybody else? Was it worth making my mom hate me? Was it worth making me hate my dad?
I could have walked away right then and there. It wasn't too late.
I could have been one of those people who survived impact, holed up in a bomb shelter, and lived the rest of my life in the dark, fully armed, eating canned goods, telling myself everything was fine. "Did you know Misty took your money?" The words left me before I could stop them. "The $1,000 you saved up so you could leave Dad? Did you know she was the one who took it?" The last traces of softness fled from her face. Her mouth clamped shut. She was ready for me. "She's had it all this time," I went on, uninvited. "Amber found it last week in her closet. Did you know about it?" Mom weighed her options. I knew she was thinking about lying, but she couldn't deny the actual existence of the cash. "I thought your dad took that money," she said slowly. "Well, he didn't. Misty did." I waited. She started examining her fingernails. She wasn't going to say anything else. I couldn't believe it. "Mom," I urged, "the money." She looked up at me.
"I suppose it will come in handy," she said.
It was a smart-ass response. My mom had never talked to me that way either. My absolute aloneness in this world settled over me, and for a moment I was certain I knew what it felt like to die. I stood up from my chair and said to her, amazingly sane, "Fine, don't talk to me. But then I'm done taking care of your kids."
"What do you mean?"
"I'm done," I shouted at her. "Done," I shouted again, hitting my side of the glass with the flat of my hand. "I'm packing my shit and driving the fuck away from here. No one can stop me." Tears burned in my eyes. I tried blinking them away, but they kept coming.
"You know you won't leave the girls," she said, sounding like she was repeating an unremarkable weather forecast.
"Why not?
You did it?
What are you talking about? She shot back, her own temper starting to flare.
I didn't leave on purpose. Look around you. This isn't exactly the Poconos. I'm in prison. You like it here. Harley, you're talking stupid.
I don't love them, I suddenly shouted, hoping to see the words in the air so then they'd be true.
I don't feel any obligation to them. I'm their brother, not their fucking father. It's not my job.
You do love them, she argued with me.
But you can love them from a distance. That's not why you stay.
Why do I stay?
Because you know where your place is.
We stared at each other.
I tried to figure out if I had just been gravely insulted or paid the highest compliment a man could receive. I couldn't read her face, the only one I had always trusted. She took a deep breath and blew away her anger. The loss of it seemed to age and cripple her. She lowered herself back into her chair with the trembling delicacy of the very old. She closed her eyes.
Okay, Harley. Misty took the money.
What more do you want me to tell you? I was saving up to leave your dad. You know that too.
She rubbed her face with her hands like she was trying to wash something stubborn off it.
I guess it makes sense that Misty was the one who took it. She knew that I was thinking about leaving. I don't know how, but she came to me and told me she knew I wanted to take her away from him. That was the way she said it. It wasn't about the rest of the family, it was just about him and her. She talked like I was the other woman.
She shut up. I could tell by the caution on her face that she was sure she had said too much. A chill ran through me. I saw the filthy, bloody carcass of a white kitten, its dead green eyes like marbles, lying on the bright spring grass. We had it so briefly I couldn't even remember its name. It had been something preordained, Snowball, Fluffy, Princess. Mom glanced up at me.
Precious.
I saw it etched in silver in her eyes. That was the kitten's name. I dropped into my chair again. Now I was ready for her. My past had taught me that the strength to face atrocity didn't come from bravery, but from reaching a certain level of numbness.
What was going on between Dad and Misty? I asked her.
Her eyes turned to sandblasted gray as if she had made them ready for me to carve into them whatever horrible image I chose.
You owe me, I said.
Owe you? Her voice took on a crazy edge. It was almost a laugh.
I don't owe you anything.
How can you say that? You're my mom.
So?
What does that mean? I owe you love? I owe you myself? You can't give those things on demand. You can only give them willingly.
What are you saying? I asked, fear creeping all over me.
You don't want to give those things anymore?
I did my best, Harley. Can you try and understand? I did my best to be your mom, and I failed.
She stopped and sucked in a pained breath, doubling over like someone had punched her. When she raised her head again, tears were streaming down her face.
She tried to smile through them the way I had seen her do so many times after Dad had hurt me, and I felt the same sick, confusing mix of need and loathing I had always felt for her unconditional love and denial.
What was going on between Dad and Misty? I pushed harder. I wanted her to tell me it was true, to tell me she knew about it, to speak the unspeakable, to prove the unbelievable. It would make Dad more deserving of what he got. It would make Mom more justified in what she had done. It would take away some of my own guilt. It would be all Misty's fault now. Mom hadn't killed him because he beat me. But why would she have kept it a secret? It didn't make sense. I remembered a hushed conversation between lawyers. If only there had been sexual abuse, they argued. She'd get a lighter sentence, and then they had both looked at Mom as if she were a piece of pie they wished was slightly bigger.
I never saw anything, she said in a tear-choked whisper.
Did you ask Dad?
I said, my own voice breaking in the middle. She wiped at her cheeks with her fingertips and regarded me blankly.
How do you ask that question, Harley? Did you ask Misty? How do you ask that question, Harley?
I stared straight ahead.
Her face dissolved into my own transparent reflection in the plexiglass.
Then you never knew anything for sure?
She stayed silent.
The only one who knew for sure was Misty, I said.
Groovy snaked in front of my eyes in wavy fluorescent green letters.
Misty killed Dad, I said in a flat voice.
Mom didn't answer.
Another chill rippled through me, but this time it made me warm.
Mom's face came back to me, peacefully lifeless now that she was done crying and the truth was out. I thought of Snow White in her glass coffin. If I outlived Mom, I was going to bury her under plexiglass.
Misty killed Dad, I said again. It was a huge, colossal, momentous revelation, but it was a cruel one, not a kind one. It didn't solve anything. It didn't bring back Dad. It didn't bring back Mom. It didn't answer any questions. It posed new ones. It opened a door on a whole new set of betrayals. The fact that I wasn't feeling anything was one of them.
I don't get it, I said. You didn't have to take the blame for her. Nothing would have happened to her. She's just a kid.
Harley, you don't understand.
Who could blame her for killing him after what he did? The courts wouldn't have done anything to her. She would have got help. She needs help.
You don't understand, Mom repeated forcefully.
Were you embarrassed? You didn't want anyone to know what he did to her?
Harley, Misty didn't want your father dead. She wanted to be with him.
Is that why you said you did it? So it wouldn't be on the news?
Harley, Mom screamed. She was aiming at me.
Mom's face changed shape, blurred and fell away from me into a depthless hole of writhing groovies.
She was trying to kill me, I heard her explain.
Your dad accidentally got in the way.
I saw the whole thing. Mom at the stove adjusting knobs and stirring pots, talking absentmindedly about us kids, how the girls were driving her crazy after a summer of no school, how she was concerned about me. I didn't seem to have any direction or ambition. Maybe Dad should talk to me about finding a job.
Dad sitting at the kitchen table, his sock feet propped up on the chair across from him, his head tilted back, eyes closed, trace contentment on his lips. He gets up suddenly to go to the refrigerator for a beer, to wash his hands before dinner, to give Mom's rear end a quick feel.
Mom glances over at the sound and catches Misty in the living room with a rifle poised on one shoulder. In that flash of an instant, she understands everything. She gets answers to questions she didn't know needed asking. She suddenly understands all the impossible things Misty is, calm but violent, omniscient but naive, new but ruined. A shadow with substance, a violated child with a mother who missed it. Mom had her 6 seconds, all right. Dad wouldn't have known anything. Poor Misty. The only thing she thought she was any good at was aiming a gun, and she had fucked up the most important shot she would ever take. I started laughing. I closed my eyes and saw groovy everywhere. I couldn't stop laughing. It felt great and it felt wrong, like sex with a screamer. A pair of hands clamped down roughly on my shoulders and started to lift me out of my chair. I looked up and saw Mom. She wasn't crying anymore. She should have been crying. A female guard was escorting her away.
I'm going to get you out, I yelled at her.
I knew she heard me because she shook her head.
You can't hide from us.
I was pulled back from the glass. I wanted to splatter myself against it like a bug on a windshield.
Your best wasn't good enough, I screamed. You're going to have to try again.
Let's go. I was yanked and shoved, but not too hard. I recognized the voice. It belonged to the young guard with the shades.
Let's go, he said again.
My mom didn't do it, I told him urgently over my shoulder. She took the blame for my sister. My sister killed my dad.
He looked unimpressed. It happens sometimes.
I want to get my mom out.
We stopped in the hall. I was breathing heavily and sweat blurred my vision. I figured he'd walk away, but he turned his eyes on me like two shiny black coins.
Does your mom want out?
I don't think so.
Does your sister want in?
She's a kid.
There's nothing you can do.
I want my mom back, I said. If I were you, your mom's not the one I'd be concerned about, he offered before turning to leave. His rubber heels made a tiny, piercing squeak like a scared baby rabbit. I had never even known they could make noise until a day last spring when I saw Elvis's teeth snap down on one. It had been no bigger than my fist.
Chapter 16. I stopped at every beer distributor I could find, and finally, on about the 10th try, I found one that didn't ask me for ID. I was surprised it took that long. I figured my visit with Mom had aged me at least as much as the first time Callie had fucked me, and I woke up from that feeling 100 years older. I spent all my money except for $2 and bought a case of the cheapest shit they sold. I opened my first can before I was even out of barking range for the distributor's dog. After 3 cans, I let myself think about Misty. After 3.5, I made myself stop thinking about her. After 5, I headed for Uncle Mike's house. I hadn't been to his house since Dad's funeral. We all went there after to eat crusty baked ham and avoid talking to each other. Mike Jr. brought a date. He lived a 40-minute drive away from our place, which was just enough to justify none of us ever seeing each other now. But it had been close enough when Dad was alive for the two of them to hang out together all the time. His house was perfect. His lawn, too. There wasn't a speck of dirt on the white siding, not a flake of rust on the wrought iron railing leading up the front steps to the polished gold door knocker, not an inch of peeling paint on the green shutters, not a single leaf peeking out from a rain gutter, not a single dandelion or patch of clover or pile of dog shit anywhere in his yard. When he criticized and advised on the topic of home maintenance, I couldn't ignore him on the grounds that he didn't practice what he preached. I could ignore him for lots of other reasons, though. I took one look at the flawless blacktop driveway and parked my truck on the side of the road. I didn't want to have to come out here later and mop up tire tracks. I got out, finished my latest beer, crumpled the can, and tossed it in the back of my truck. I was at a loss trying to decide where I should walk. Which would be worse, getting dirt on their driveway or dirt on their blinding white sidewalk or dirt on their grass? I picked the grass since it grew in dirt, but I wasn't completely sure about their grass, so I got down on my knees and checked. Sure enough, dirt. Fine, rich, uniform dirt. Bank calendar dirt. To look at Uncle Mike, I would have never thought he lived this way. I had never seen his person looking particularly clean or fit, but he was one of those guys who took more pride in what he owned than who he was. I slowly got to my feet and sort of tiptoed across the yard, trying not to bend too many blades of grass. I made a stop at their birdbath. It was cleaner than the mug I drank my coffee out of every morning. I dipped my hand in and slurped up some water. The mat in front of the door read, "Welcome, friends." I checked my reflection in the knocker and saw a fancy, engraved Altmer stamped across my forehead. I remembered Aunt Jan bitching to my mom once about people who actually used the knocker to knock with. I planned to be one of them, but I made sure to wipe my hands off on my coat first. I still left fingerprints. Aunt Jan took her good old time getting to the door. Apparently, she didn't peek through curtains first because she looked totally stunned to see me. She put a hand to the collar on her shirt and stared. "Aunt Jan?" I said, thinking that might help her out. "Harley," she finally managed to say. "I'm sorry you gave me a fright. I never realized how much you look like your dad, especially dressed just like him."
"You thought I was a ghost?"
She gave an edgy laugh. "I suppose so." She laughed again. I laughed too.
"Is Uncle Mike around?" I asked after we stopped laughing.
"Yes, he is."
"Do you think I could talk to him?"
She gave the question some thought. "I don't see why not," she said.
"Me either," I said.
She held the door open for me. She always wore a man-style shirt with a pocket over one breast tucked into stiff, inky blue jeans. Today the shirt was green and yellow checks. I wiped my feet on the welcome mat,
then apologized in case it was the kind I wasn't supposed to use, like the knocker. She smiled and said, "That's what welcome mats are for." But I knew the minute I drove away she was going to hose it down and go at it with a scrub brush. "I won't touch anything or sit on anything," I told her as I stepped inside. "I realize I'm kind of dirty. I was working in the yard earlier."